And welcome to another Gaslit podcast. And thank you very much indeed for listening. This is episode 48. We're only four more away from the magic 52. And that will be the Gaslit podcast first birthday. And did you know on podcasts, there's only 720,000 podcasts that make it past episode 10 in the whole world. So podcasting is something that people have a go at and they don't see it through, and 90% fail after three episodes and they pack it in. So we're at episode 48, and I made a promise to you guys right at the beginning I was going to carry this on and see it through. So the listening figures are growing, so yeah, it's all good, and it's always been a very slow and steady graph. And funny enough, one of the questions that people ask me is, how much money do you make out of the podcast? Do you know what? I don't make a penny, and I'm not actually interested in making a penny either. I really want to get across to you and help you guys out, and showcase obviously what the business and what we can do here at Gaslit. And so that's the main thing about it all. And if, you know, Weira want to come on and sponsor the podcast and give us a couple of free tools, I'll never say no to a free bit of Weira. You know that, guys. Anyway, I want to go through a couple of little bits with you. I've got some listeners' questions I want to get answered. And I want to run through with what's been going on this week and last week as well that's coming up. So first thing I want to do, I'll show you a couple of bits that we use here. So we've got a torque wrench. It goes from 10 to 50 newton meters. This is all back to front, so apologies for the old wiggling. So this torque wrench here, so when we've got our larger commercial fittings, and when we start getting sort of above two and a half inches, we don't have sort of screw fittings really. We start coming to flanges. So it's like a big round a bolting part that comes together. Hopefully I can put a picture up and show you what one of those look like there. And then the bolts go all the way through, and then they have some sort of fiber washer that goes through. Sometimes they have a rubber washer. I prefer the fiber ones because they're a bit more rigid when you're sliding them in, if it's a bit on the tighter side. And you pop those in, and then you do the bolts up to a torque setting. And we've got a graph, and it shows you what the setting should be. So it's around 20 newton meters of torque. So then, like a car wheel nut, and maybe I'll do them up at 12 all the way around, then I'll maybe up to sort of 14, and then 16, then 18, and bring it up to the big magic 20. But it's really important that you just don't do one up to 20, then the next one, because it pulls all the face out and it starts compressing down on the fiber gasket, and it doesn't like it, and you will get a leak and you will get a callback on it. And as I always say to the team here, we get paid to go there the first time, we don't get paid to go there the second time. So let's get it right first time first and save a bit of money. So yeah, it's a great little bit of kit, this. All you do is you sort of just twist the handle, and you can just see the adjustment going up and down there. It goes in little quarters in the window, so you can get it just set right, and then you push that little stopper in somehow, that's it, and it just locks it in. Standard half inch, just push the release on it, standard half inch drive on that there. So that's how we do the flanges up and stuff. I know the big three phase water heaters, up to about 45 kilowatts. They're quite large, and they bolt in, and you have a selection of bolts that pull in, and they got to be to a certain torque setting as well. I think they're 12 newton meters, I think those ones, from memory. We got it written down somewhere. So yeah, that's one of the tools we got. Also, I want to show you guys our press gun. So this weekend we've been working. I've been working in a children's nursery out of ours. So we had a gravity hot water system, turning it over to a sealed, unvented hot water. So we had 100 gallons of stored water up in the loft. That poses lots of problems with Legionella, lids, fly screens, insulation, tanks freezing up in the loft, etc., etc. And the risk of 50 gallons of water up there splitting and then emptying itself through the ceiling if there was a catastrophic failure as well. So we've gone to the unvented cylinder. We actually put that up in the loft and we lagged it out. Hopefully I'll be able to add a couple of pictures here. You can get to see what we was dealing with. So the weather weren't too bad this weekend. It was actually reasonably mild. So imagine doing that on the hottest day of the year in a loft. Oh, that would have been absolute mega dramas, that would have been. But what we'd be able doing lots of. Well, we used the brand new Rothenberg electric pipe bender because we had so much 22 to bend. 22, yeah, you can pull it by hand, but we had so much to do, we just set the bender up and it's like, bomb, bomb, bomb. We had plenty of space in the loft. It was a really big loft. So we used that this weekend. And we used the press gun as well. So I've just got an old fitting here, and this fitting, the rubber in it's a little bit bitty, and we wouldn't use that because it doesn't, I've got no confidence in it. But I just want to show you how it works. So here we've got a bit of 22 pipe, just an old bit of off-cut, and then we just make sure it's clean. And then we just offer these two up. And typically what we'll do is we'll bring that together, just looking around, and we'll push that home, and then we'll mark it with a pen. Didn't really think this through, did I? So we'll mark it with a pen, and there we are. And then we'll say, right, that's where the shoulder is to there on the pen, to the pen mark. So if we do press it and it does sort of come back out, we can say, oh, there it is, there's the mark. It's actually come out a little bit before we squeeze it. And obviously we do have a little bit to play with there on the shoulder, you can see, but we don't have too much. Okay, so this is the we've got like an alpha press, so this is the small press gun that we use. These are 15 22 28. So what we then do is we then clip it into the jaws like so, so that's all linked into there. So and then all we then do is we then push the button. And then push the button, I can let go of the button, and it'll actually go through its cycle, and then that's now completely pressed. And all we do is we pull open the jaws, just on the sides, like so, and then we just roll it out and bring it out backwards. Now, the only thing, sometimes these can leave a little bit of a nip on there. So if it's in a place where people are going to come in contact with it, just get a hand file on that and just rub it. It's only a bit of copper, and that'll come off. If it's beyond insulation or tucked away somewhere, and it doesn't really matter, you can leave that little pinch mark there on there. It's not a problem. So if I then do the other side, and then we can then see how it works. So hopefully you can see this on video. There we are. And then that's then what it looks like on the inside. So all it's done, it's difficult to see, is it's just created these like little ridges. And then that just pinches down onto the pipe. And then the rubber O-ring in here. And this is black, which means it's set for water, this one. Typically the gas ones are yellow. AquaPress do a dual. You can actually use the gas on water, but you can't use the water ones on gas. Yeah, so then that just presses down. The O-ring then creates the seal, and the actual crimp in itself actually brings it down and creates the mechanical joint of this. And you won't get this separated, no matter what you do, be honest. So it's a very good system. The downside is when you put these in, they're a little bit on the floppier side. So if you imagine if you did this joint and another one, another one, another one, another one, and you actually created a bit, you know, 5, 6, 10 joints all in one go, as soon as you start doing the first one, it'll put it up absolutely dead square. Now, if this is dropped down a bit and then you go, oh, that's where that is, then that's where that is, as soon as you start doing that, before you know it, the end of your pipe is miles off of where you need it. So it's actually, I normally sort of just do a couple and then I go, right, squeeze and plan these out. And then once I've then planned these out, I then know where I'm going to be for the next leg, you know, how big it needs to be, or, you know, does the angle need to sort of change a little bit, because it's all been pulled up and it's all nice and true. So that's the press gun. We do have a bigger one. It goes up to 54, which we'll be using later on this week. We've got a job in a food factory. We're going to be running 54 mil copper in that for the gas supply. Could be in a food processing place, making food. Because what is the special property of copper? Germs can't live on it. That's why they use it for water. You don't get any problems with water. It's the plastic stuff. It's the rubbish inside. That gives us the old belly aches. But the actual copper, nothing can live on that. And if we could have hospital operating theatres cladded in copper everywhere, with copper light switches, copper door handles, copper taps coming out of the tap handles, we'd have a lot lower infection rates and stuff like that. And there's been some studies done on this over the past as well. I just want to quickly show you a little technique for joining some pipes together. Now, I was working in a very nice hotel in the week for another company who's got a contract on the, not the FM side of things, but he was doing a lot of AC work then. I've asked him to do the commercial gas, what they do have in the building. So I was in this commercial kitchen and I was connecting up a new appliance. And I was connecting it up and this guy come over and he was, we'll just say he's a maintenance guy and he was as keen as mustard. Now, I love a little bit of intrigue and that's really what, how my day goes, really. What's this? What's that? How does that work? Pull it apart. Let's cut it. Let's have a look inside. I'm a very, very inquisitive person and was making up a little fitting just to bring up. So I thought, oh, I'm going to show you because he was asking me loads of questions about it. So from desk downstairs, I've got literally a half inch plug and I've got a half inch socket there that comes off to there. So, and then that will then screw on. I didn't actually test this before I did it. There we are. So it's been rattling around to the box. And so that little thread there will actually come off in a little bit of solder pipe. And that's sort of how that should work. But I really want to show you the stuff we use. So we use a lot of this Loctite 55. Or the equivalent. There are some other equivalents out there, this Loctite. So it's actually really, really tough. And it's like a silicon sort of, like a Teflon, coated like string almost. And on the cap there, we've got a little slice because, there we are, just cuts off. Because this stuff here, you will not, I reckon you could tow a car with it. It's that strong. You won't be able to stop that and certainly don't try and bite it with your teeth. And so all we do here is as the as it goes on, I always hold this in my right hand and then I'll take the cord on my left and I'll wrap it this way round and I'll show you why. So it's going to be a little bit difficult on that. So all I do is I'll just follow the thread and bring that round. And there we are. Bring it in and I'll just do that little cut off there. So I'll just follow that round through into there. So that is what it looks like inside the thread. Now, if you watch the old American stuff, they'll then get a bit of plumbing paste and then pop that round as well. Now, I've done it both ways and it works a treat. If you're just using the thread and we bring that across, one of the things you could think about is plumbing paste is fantastic and we use it all the time. If you put too much on and then it goes into the water pipe and through, that then hits. And the biggest problem we get is actually toilet fills. Toilet fills have a tiny, tiny, tiny little hole. And if you've got a lump of this like waxy, greasy sort of plumbing paste, now it's not pleasant, but it's absolutely safe to drink. It's not a poisonous material. Exactly the same as this Loctite 55. And what you do is you look for there, it's suitable for portable water, and that pot water sometimes it has a WRAS logo on it. I didn't look, I didn't look at all, but it's suitable for water up to 130 degrees onto the pot there, suitable for drinking, and it's suitable for gas as well. So nice round material. But yeah, if we do use the plumbing paste, that can go off, and then the little filters on the end of the tap, they can then get little bits in there and start blocking up. But the toilets are the biggest one. So then all I do onto that there is then I'll then just screw that on. Obviously, I don't have any tools with me right now. Just doing it in the hands. That's now gone too tight for me to carry on winding that. And that'll then wind up to the thread and create a nice seal. And then if we have a look inside, I'm trying to find the camera. It's just starting to bunch up a little bit there. But it'll actually hold itself as it's going on. But the rotation that I always do on the thread, as we're then doing it this way, is actually going with the rotation rather than against the rotation and cutting across the threads. And then so do that up nice and tight, pull that through. We'll have a little bit of this bagging up and stuff like that to get a knife and just cut the excess off. And that's really nice and simple. So for your hot water, for your cold water, and for your gas, a bit of Loctite 55 or equivalent. Then no one sponsors my videos, so I'm not pushing any brands at all there. So we've got a couple of questions that are coming actually from. I'll put some stuff out on social media, so I'm about to do the podcast. And any questions that are coming. So I've got a question in from Mike. So he says, "How often should you clean out your radiators?" So it's a bit of a tricky question, this one. So radiators are made of steel, basically, within our heating system. So if we've got an open vented, so if you've got the small F&E tank, the filling and expansion tank in the loft, the water in the system is open to the atmosphere, so it can take on more air. And certainly if it's over pumping, like a fish pond with the filter that goes, you know, with the little fountain that goes in, brings air into. And air isn't our friend in water when it comes to central heating. We can then start having, obviously, in steel, it's wet, which is going to create rust, and it's got oxygen in it, which then starts the corrosion process. So with the chemicals in the heating system, we're trying to lower the oxygen content within the water. And if we can lower that right down nicely, actually, that then really does slow down the corrosion process. And if we do have a sealed heating system, like a combi boiler or a system boiler, then we don't have that open to atmosphere. So that actually, we actually run a cleaner system by having it on the sealed side. But the chemicals are the key. So if you have some work done, and you're changing a radiator, you want to drain down, then fill back up again, just be mindful about the chemicals. Now, if you're, you know, one bottle, typically we do a 100-liter installation, but whoever measures how much water's in a central heating system, or it'll do around about a 10-radiator system. But one thing about inhibitor is you can't overdose. So if you go and famously we'll do this on a heating system, we'll chuck two bottles in, because then that'll do 20 radiators. If you, 200 litres, how much have you got? Don't know. If you bleed a bit off, you know, and have a bit of a spillage of water out of the system, it doesn't really matter. Once it's all mixed in, if the concentrate is a little bit on the higher side, it makes no difference. It's absolutely fine. And if we could afford it, we'd fill every single heating system up with inhibitor and no water at all. And that'll probably get on for probably the most ideal thing to do. Now, the problem with the inhibitor as well as, actually, it does freeze. So it doesn't have any antifreeze properties with it. I should have checked it out, actually, what the freezing temperature is. But I had a bottle of inhibitor in the back of the van when we was having the winter, and it was like a slushy. It had frozen in the back. You know, and I'm thinking, I'm still wearing shorts and T-shirt today, and the inhibitor's frozen in the back of the van. So, I don't think it has a very great freeze point onto that for that side of things. But, you know, keep on top of the inhibitor, and it'll be absolutely fine. So we've got another question in about pipes banging. So typically, a pipe will bang. So pipes will, there's a couple of things, really. We've got expansion. So when things get hotter, they grow in size. So our copper pipes within our heating system, if we've got them laid in the floor, and when they start to warm up, you get that creaking, that knock, 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 where they're not being lagged properly and there's not enough space for it to move around, they can start creaking away. Some people call that a bit of banging, but but the biggest problem you get is when we turn off like the cold mains. And we turn it off. Now, we've got all these quarter turn taps now, rather than the old fashioned taps with the seat, with the 20 rotations to turn the bath tap on and the 20 rotations to turn it fully back on again. When we had those systems there, and we had the old outside water taps without the non-return valves, when we then squeezed those off, we didn't get any of this water hammer, as it's commonly known as. But now we've got the ceramic discs and we've got the non-return valve outside. When we've got this higher pressure, we can actually turn the tap off really, really quickly. So if we've got a standing pressure of, say, 3 bar, and then we've got, when we open it up, it goes down to, say, 2 bar, we then shut it off really quickly in water terms, only quarter turn, and then this massive shock wave that comes through, and that can create these pipe rattles. So when we fit a new combi boilers, they want us to fit these little mini expansion vessels. and expansion vessels all really down to the plastic parts that they fit inside the boiler, because that shock wave goes through the plastic bits, and then if there's any little cracks and fissures, it can open them up and cause a leak. So that's the biggest thing there. So support the pipes properly. We had a job a couple of weeks ago, and we had to take up the first floor and cut it out. They had an expansion vessel or shock arrestor actually onto the boiler, but it made no difference at all. These pipes were just sort of just wangling around, and they were just banging against each other. Banging against each other every time you turn the hot and the cold, because they weren't supported correctly. So we got them supported properly. We put some lagging over it. And guess what? Hey, presto, it was sorted with the problem. So it's not a complicated thing, really. If the plumbing's done right at the start, you'll never have the issue. So there we are. Can I fit my own rads? So ultimately, yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. It's not bound like the gas safe rules or your electrical sort of rules. You can do what you want, really, on the water side in your own home. Just be mindful that if you do have a gravity system, you are working at a lower pressure, which is great if you're adjusting any pipe work, because you can get away with a few blue murders there, I tell you. But if you're working on a sealed system, you can be working at a higher pressure, so you need to be a lot more careful. So if you're on a gravity system and you're on the first floor and you've got the tank in the loft, from the bottom of the tank, as we always measure it, don't measure it from the water line, the bottom of the tank, sort of the worst, sort of the best case scenario, not worst case, and then it's 0.1 of a meter is, sorry, 1 meter is 0.1 of a bar. So from a standard house, if the tank's in the loft coming down, you've probably got about 3 or 4 meters to your radiator on the ground, on the first floor, which is then only 0.3, 0.4 of a bar. So it's not a lot, really. You can probably hold that with your thumb as a pressure goes. Obviously, you go down to the ground floor, you're going to increase that by, say, another 3 meters. So that's another third of a bar. So you're getting on for about 3/4 of a bar of pressure, which isn't a lot of pressure, I'll be honest. When you start sealing in the heating system, you could be running at 1 to 2 bar. So you're coming up into the sort of the higher pressures. So if you didn't do a joint right, it will show itself. And we do get that from time to time when we change over from a gravity heating system over to a sealed heating system. And then that can, you know, typically it's radiator valves that normally go, all the little gland nuts that have been there for decades. Running WCs on continuous. So, it's old hay fever season started, isn't it? So running WCs, so it's one of two things. If you've got a closed coupled system, we now don't have overflow pipes on toilets. That was outlawed ages and ages ago. Excuse me. So what can happen is if the float of the water level comes up too high, the top of the flush is a hole, and basically it'll fill itself in and go into the pan. You see the trickling usually down the back edge of the pan. So if your float valve on your incoming isn't turning off properly, it'll fill up and it'll overflow. Sometimes, like on the new push button stuff, it sort of, there's like a carriage and it lifts up, lets the water out and drops back down again. Now, if that doesn't seal properly, that will then let the water go. So if you can get the top off and have a look of the toilet system, that is, have a look down inside. Is the water level really high or is it really, really low? And then that'll tell you what part, is it the flush or the fill, that's causing the problem there. And sometimes if you've got like a modern system, you can actually, and it's on a cartridge, you can give it a little quarter turn and the cartridge comes out. And there's a little rubber gasket on the bottom. See if there's any bits of rubber on there. And the little trick is, on some of them, you can actually take the rubber off, turn it round, and then pop the rubber back in, because it's like bent when it makes its little seal, because it's only the weight of the water that creates it. And it sort of forms up a little bit. Sometimes you turn it back over and you'll get another few months out of it. But ultimately, it will need changing, because these things don't last forever. If it's failed one way, give it a bit and it'll fail the other, if it works at all. But you have a bit of an idea on what's going on to there. And the last question is, do I turn my heating off in the summer? I go on about this all the time. Yes, turn your heating off in the summer, because we don't want 30 degree out, it's too hot. But periodically turn your boiler on. Turn the thermostat up to kick it in. to move over your three port, to move over your two port, or just on your combi boiler, just getting that actuate on the old diverter valve moving, get the pump on and get it circulating. And now, if you've got a modern boiler with a flow temperature, you can turn that down so it's not baking hot in your house and just get that water moving and moving and moving around. And a lot of people, what they do in the summer is they turn the TRVs down to zero. They turn them down, and there's a little spring pin, and it pushes it down, it holds it. We then go back in 3-4 months' time, and then we undo it, and the pin don't move. Radios don't work. Pump doesn't work. Three-port valve doesn't work. Two-port valve doesn't work. We get all of these problems, and most of them could be saved by leave the TRVs alone, turn your heating off, and just run it maybe once a month for 10, 20 minutes with a low flow temperature, and just get it circulating around, and that will save you loads of grief when it comes to the spring, comes to the autumn when turning it back on. So that's it for another podcast. So thank you very much indeed for listening. It's getting on for 26 minutes now. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much indeed. Any more questions you want answered, ping them over to the email address podcast@gaslec.net. All the best, guys. Have a great week. Take care. Goodbye.